Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'm Linda Lamp, and I'm here with my co-host, Mary Ardagna, and we are doing our podcast, Let's Become a Beloved Society, Conversations Illuminating Your Path to Wholeness. So today's topic is, it's an interesting one. I thought the question was a really interesting question. How do we protect trans kids from all this hateful legislation that's happening all around the country?
It's a good question.
It's a really good question. Another question you might ask, kind of related to that, is why is there so much hateful legislation going on all around the country?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the answer is a political answer. And it's also a broken spirituality answer, right? And that might be the first place we should start the conversation. People, especially in this country, and something that's interesting to note about this country is that it's way more religious than most other countries. In terms of numbers of religions and various points of view, we are extremely diverse, which was, I think, the original intention of the founding fathers, was to allow everyone their own opinion and idea. You can believe whatever you want to believe. The problem is that, unlike what the founding fathers, I think, had in mind, which was a clear and distinct separation between you can believe whatever you want to believe, but we can also all agree on ways to live together harmoniously. And that's the government part of it, right? That's when you walk out of your house, how you behave in public, how you treat other people in public, how you get around in public, whether they're sidewalks or roads. These are all the things that come from a community government. You come together in community and you govern yourselves. And that's why they always wanted a complete separation. Hey, Nanette, thank you for joining us. That's why they always wanted a separation, a very clear separation between religion, church, and state. Because your religion shouldn't have anything to do with how you get around. What are the sidewalks like? What are the roads like? How do you pay for those things? What you believe in your house shouldn't be tangled up in the decisions that you're making together. Because the founding fathers understood that we're all one. Even before we had the science to prove that we're all one, they understood it. They believed it. They knew how that worked. Mary, do you have anything to add?
Honestly, right now, the main thing is just punching on that point of separation of church and state. It was really crucial to our founding. You know, most people who came here, or a lot of people who came here, were escaping religious persecution in England at the time of our founding, right, or our whatever, stealing right land from Native Americans, however you want to call it. But like, that was really a principle. And it just drives me bananas when people, you know, it's like they don't understand that that was a founding principle of our country. I really see that as one of the most important tenets of right our government. So that's all.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's a truly critical and fundamental part. And I think it's also important to note that the original Pledge of Allegiance did not include the word God.
Right.
And it was only in the 1950s, it took that long for the pushback from some people about keeping church and state separated that we ended up with the word in the Pledge of Allegiance.
It was during the Cold War when they were trying to distinguish us from those godless communists. That's when they put under God in,
right,
to sort of, you know, make that distinction.
Right. Thank you for that. I didn't have that little piece of history fact there.
Yeah.
It's really troubling because even saying under God, like, what does that mean at this point? Because there are some people's God who apparently is telling them that trans children have something wrong with them, that we shouldn't have them, that they shouldn't be allowed, that trans adults shouldn't be allowed, that there's something wrong with them. And it's really troubling because, as we've talked about in other podcasts, if you trace any of the religions, any major religion, and most even minor religions, to their origin, where they originally came from, it all comes back to a teaching of love, a four-letter word, love. But what is going on in many of these red states in our country, what's going on in Florida, there's no love. It's pure hate. And we have to have the bravery to stand up to it, because this is the time.
I mean, people are afraid of things they don't understand. Let's start there. And I can totally understand not understanding trans people, because I remember when I was one of those people who was like, I don't understand this at all. And I don't understand it because I am not trans at all. I am what we call cisgender. That is the appropriate term for somebody who was born in a body that was classified a particular gender at birth, and that is the gender I have always felt like I am and believe that I am. And I used to think, in a perfect world where people could just be ourselves without all these arbitrary restrictions, nobody would need to be trans because we could all just be human and it would all be la-di-da. And that may or may not be true. I don't even know that I necessarily believe that anymore. Because if you're in a body that's classified one way and you always feel like that's not right and that's not who you are, those things might not matter, like the laws and things. And so what I want to say to people who have difficulty with the whole concept of transness is it doesn't really matter if you understand. What matters is that you believe other people when they tell you about their lived experience. You right. know, I was also born right-handed, and that was fine. In the olden days, sometimes people were born left-handed, and somebody tried to force them to write with their right hand because the left hand was the hand of the devil. But they knew that they were really left-handed, and forcing them to write with their right hand didn't really change who they were or who they knew they were. So, like, maybe we can look at it like that. It's an attribute of a human being. And, you know better than I do who you are. And I trust that. And a thing that happened for me is that, you know, I had a very good friend who was trans. I mean, they weren't when we met. This was nothing they talked about with me. And then as time went on, things changed, and they did. And so I had a very personal experience with someone I was very close to and loved a lot. And then I worked at a drag restaurant. And, you know, the people there are all along the spectrum of what you might mean by trans. Some live out in the world looking like a woman and you'd never know they weren't. Right. And some are like, you know, gay men who just come to work and get all dolled up. And
right.
It really, you know, I was pretty open-minded when I started there, you know, theoretically, but it really was a beautiful experience to just get to know a whole bunch of people.
Right.
Who were all over the range of expression.
Right.
And right. It was very liberating. And right. Honestly, I feel like part of the anti-trans sentiment is the same thing as what the anti-gay sentiment was, which is not as bad now. But it's like this idea that if you just let people be who they are and don't punish them for it, right. Think about how liberating that is.
Right.
Think about little kids who go to the library and see drag queens reading these books.
Right.
And they're like, oh my God, mommy, could I be that when I grow up? Could I be that fabulous? Could I be that big? Could
right.
I take up that much space and be that free? Because
right.
to me, that's what right. I got from working at a drag restaurant for nearly
right.
5 years.
Right.
I grew so much into my own self-expression because
right.
all there was permission.
Right.
There was no judgment.
Right.
You know. That's when I started dyeing my hair purple. I know you know this.
Right.
But it's like, it was just, there was nothing I could bring into that space that was going to shock anybody.
Right.
And right. that's just incredibly liberating. And I can see where to a lot of people, what I see as incredibly liberating is incredibly threatening. We don't want little kids running around thinking they can be whoever the heck they want to be. We want them to be controllable.
Right. Right. And we want them to fit into our idea of what they should be. Right. Many, many, many parents are very ego driven and they want a mini me. They
yeah.
want a little one of them, somebody that looks like them, that they can dress up like them. And
yeah,
it's I'm sure there are millions, billions probably of children who've grown up through that kind of parenting and they've been just fine.
Yeah.
They've grown up and they've been just fine. But just fine, I don't think is what we should be shooting for.
Not anymore.
I don't know that we should ever just been happy with just fine.
No. But nowadays we really need liberated humans.
We do. We need liberated, heart-based, compassionate, kind humans who will treat children with the respect that children deserve. And a lot of times we think just because they're little that they're lacking. And they're not. Most children that I meet, I actually think are gifted.
Oh, yeah.
And
especially, honestly, I think because like the collective unconscious has so much more than it did, like when you and me were little, they come into this world.
Right.
Just amazing little beings.
Right. Right. Yeah, the children that are being born nowadays are they're different. And this is what's so sad about this legislation and all these attempts to shut them down and make it go away. You know, I mean, and we're still dealing with the don't say gay. And now we're so beyond don't say gay. Wait, you know, don't say trans, don't say this, don't say it's heartbreaking. And the problem is that it's really it's really people's religions that are behind these movements. Their religions and their fears of the unknown. and they're, for the parents, the also potentially their egos and the threat of not having a mini me, the threat of I don't understand this child.
Yeah.
You know, he has a penis, but he wants to wear dresses, or she doesn't have a penis and she wants to wear pants, or, you know, dress up in military outfits or whatever, you know. And when you realize that there is no such thing as time, and you add that into this whole experience that we're having, what we can realize is that these are children who are potentially also having soul retrieval problems, issues, events, you know. So they're living in this life, but for them the veil is thin, and they can see into some other life where they're a different gender, and it's somehow bleeding through into this life. There is so much that people do not understand about today's world and how it's working. So how do we help these kids? How do we protect them? And I think one way is to start engaging in Pride events. Find there's somewhere in your community, there's a Pride association, if you look for them. And this is just one thing that you can do. You can go to a meeting, hear what they're struggling with, hear what their challenges are. You can pay attention to the legislation that's being passed.
And tell your representatives that you are not in favor of it.
Right.
Make your voice heard if you are right. Living in a place where that's happening. I am right. Fortunate. I live in California. If that day ever comes to pass, I think I'll just jump off a bridge, you know, because then there will be no hope. But like, if you are living in a place where they are trying to, you know, strangle trans people out of existence,
right.
Please make your voice heard. It is a matter of life and death for these people.
Right.
It really is. If you deny them health care, which they're trying to do, I mean, and trans people commit suicide at a rate much higher than the rest of the population. I don't know the numbers. And trans kids who are not accepted, it's the worst, you know. Trans kids who are accepted by their family, have people they love, who love them, are much less at risk for suicide. So one of the things that you can do simply is make sure that the world you are around knows that you are a safe space. And you can do that in many ways. Meetings is one way, even just like a little sticker or a pin. You know, I work at a school and all the kids have stickers on their water bottles. You can have, there's lots of things, you know, the Pride flag. There's a new Pride flag that has the trans colors and also like brown and black to include the Black Lives Matter and everything. Right. To recognize that, truthfully, it's all connected.
Right.
And until we are all free, none of us are free.
Right.
And I really wish more people grasped that.
Right.
You
right.
know, it's not, I mean, yeah. I'll step off my soapbox and let you speak. I ran out of steam there.
Well, one of the things, so I did a couple of things last night. Where I live, the town, it's actually, I don't live inside the town, but people surrounding this town all have an investment in what happens to the town, because this is where we shop, this is where we eat, we go out, you know, it's the only town around.
And it's a cute little town. I love Linda's town.
It is a cute little town. And we're looking for a city manager, by the way. So last night, at 5:30, the council had a special meeting to talk about the recruitment materials for the job posting. And I saw in there that they were advertising, planning on advertising, not just in Alaska and Washington and Oregon, but also they were going to advertise in places like Idaho and Montana, maybe Wyoming even. And this concerned me because for the most part, I don't think the people that live in Idaho or Montana or Wyoming are at all, other than perhaps their outdoor qualities of you know, hunting and fishing, mountains, snow, but and maybe hard winters. But beyond that, culturally, I don't think there's much similarity. And I really, I am always concerned about the LGBTQ plus community that we have here. It's vibrant, and yet there are also people who use their religion to attack these people and put them down and protest against their events. Hold prayer vigils. Like if there's drag queens inside the bar singing, there's church ladies in their car outside praying. So we already have a little bit of a problem ourselves. And I just sat down in front of council and I basically said that I was asking them to remember that we are a very diverse and unique community. And another thing that makes us really different is that a lot of business owners have businesses inside the city limits, but they actually live outside the city limits. So their businesses are impacted by all kinds of things that the city does, and they have no voice because they can't vote. They have no voice. And so they need to be able to come in and talk to the city manager and have an open door and not be judged based on race or color or sexual preference or anything, right? Just have an open door. And so I went and I made public comment to that effect. And then when that was done, and actually I left before the meeting was over, I went to the Pride planning event. And so the Seward Pride group was having a meeting from 6:30 to 7:30 last night, planning the events coming up this summer, because they always do. They have a Pride weekend. They have a booth at the Mermaid Festival in May. They have a booth at the 4th of July Festival. And so we were planning those things, and I'll volunteer at those events. And I'm like you, whatever that term is. I'm not up on my terms. I do apologize for that. And I'm a bit ignorant about the terms. But to me, I don't like labels. So you do you, I'll do me, and we love each other. That's how life should be working here. That's how you create heaven on earth. That's how you create a beloved society. You don't put up walls. You don't classify people. You don't make laws against them. You know.
We accept people for who they are.
Right.
You know.
At the Pride planning event last night, there was a drag queen. And I got to tell you, I fell in love with the drag queen last night. She was beautiful. She was beautiful. And it was like, wow, you know, I just think you're so cool. You know, like, I mean,
it's a common phenomenon, Linda.
Yeah, you know, and people should allow themselves to experience something different, to consider something different.
Right.
Right? Because these kids that are growing up, these kids that are being born, they're not buying in to this, you know, duality world that we've created, this he, she.
Yeah, it's really true.
They're really not.
They're really not.
And that's part of isn't that so? Doesn't it feel like an absolute brick in the road to oneness? To me, it does. It seems like if you're trying to pave a road to oneness and to an understanding of unity and how there is only the one thing, right? Everything's made out of the same stuff. There's only one thing here. One thing showing up in all kinds of different shapes and manners. But there's only one thing here. And so let's treat each other that way. Let's understand that this is all divinity in form. You, me, and everything around us. Everything and everyone. And if we were to adopt more of a curiosity about learning about each other, as opposed to our judgments and our criticisms, you don't look like me, you don't talk like me, you're not my color, you don't believe what I believe, who cares? Who cares? What can we find together in common that we can enjoy, that we can talk about?
And we all know that in general, we have more in common than we have different. We're all human beings doing our best to live in this world. We love our families. We take care of the people we love. We come together in times of trial to help each other. I mean, you know, the other stuff is just so much distraction.
Right.
But we get all caught up in it because of the divide and conquer thing. I mean, there are people who have a vested interest in driving wedges between us, because imagine if all of us went, hey, this is, you know, not a good way to do this, and let's try to be a little more fair and take care of the people who we've thrown out on the streets like refuse, you know. Hey, maybe some people could give a little more of their billions
right.
to take care of the people who have nothing, you know. When we, I think there's a few factors at play. One is when we understand that we're all connected, then we feel more of a responsibility
right.
for everyone. Right. And I think a thing that happens because of the lack, the belief in the lack and scarcity, is that there's a fear, you know. It's like, I think people have to believe that people who are in a tough state are there because they did something to deserve it. Because if they don't believe that, then it could happen to them. You know, if I'm doing everything perfect, that's supposed to protect me. Whereas that person over there clearly effed up, and that's why they're suffering. And right. whether that's a poor person on the street or a gay person or a trans person, the same mentality of like, I don't want to be like them, and so I have to make myself different, and so I make them wrong because they're not, you know, following all the laws that, you know, this is my grasping of
right
part of why this system is the way it is.
I think you're right, Mary, and I also think that there's an element of when we're uncomfortable, when things make us uncomfortable, it's not about the thing. It's about us. And most people are not in a mindset to look at the situation from that point of view.
Right.
They just want to shut it off, right? I'm uncomfortable. You stop doing what you're doing.
Right.
Rather than I'm uncomfortable, what does that say about me?
Right.
There's nothing wrong with you. I don't have the business to say there's something wrong with you.
Right.
That's not even in my purview. That's not in my wheelhouse. But me, what is it? And we're not encouraged to be self-reflective. We're just not encouraged to be that way.
Right.
And so the only thing any of us have any control over at all is ourselves.
Yeah.
right? What we want to pay attention to, what we want to think about, how we want to show up in the world. The only person who has any control over any of that is us. And it's the only thing we have control over. But society has been crafted in such a way, at least in our country, that it gives legislators control over all kinds of things that then appear to be outside of our control and purview. And that's why when it comes to the answer of how do we protect trans kids, is you have to get involved. You have to get involved at least to the point where you're speaking up.
Yeah. It's so important. And it's really, really important when you hear someone saying something of the hateful stuff to speak up in a loving manner and maybe ask, oh, why do you think that? Or something like that.
Right.
So that if you ask them a reflective question, maybe they can think about it and then maybe you can engage in a civil conversation. But like, it's really important that if we come across people in our everyday life, that we make our voice known to the people who might listen to us.
Right.
That we, you know, the people who cross our path, those are the people who it's our job, because we know that because they're in our path, you know?
Right.
That's really how I feel about it. And it's just like, if you hear something that makes you cringe a little, whether it's racial or, you know, about trans or whatever, you know, we got to be brave and say, oh, that's interesting. You know, why do you think that? And because that's the only way we're going to be able to make a difference, right?
Right.
Sitting here thinking I'm so, you know, woke and I have all the right viewpoints doesn't do any good if I'm not using my wokeness to
right.
try to affect the circle.
Right.
You know, that's in my
what. I've got to laugh because I wear this ring. I'm going to see if I can get it off my finger. Let's see. We're having a little puffy day today, but it'll come off. But basically, this ring, it says love life on it, right? What you can't see is that on the inside, in here, it says be brave.
Mm.
And you just said be brave. And I invoked this ring last night because there are a couple of people on the council dais that scared me in relationship to what I was speaking about.
Yeah.
And so it was definitely an act of bravery last night for me to go to that. I was the only one there, too. I was the only one from the entire community that showed up at that meeting to say anything about what kind of city manager are you going to hire. So in a way, I'm a little disappointed that all the civic engagement work that I've done over the last 5 years or so doesn't seem to have stuck, right? People got engaged for a while, and then now they're just back to being keyboard warriors. And so thank you for, I have a feeling I know that who that is. You are both the wokest people I've ever met. And Nanette made a comment that she's listening, but she's had somebody get a hold of her debit card in some way and make a charge. So she's got to call the bank and deal with that. So we appreciate you letting us know. I thought, Nanette, you were being awfully quiet. I wondered what was going on. Yeah, being brave is something that I don't think people are necessarily encouraged or taught what bravery really means. But it requires bravery when you discover you're feeling uncomfortable about something. to look within, to own it, and to say, this is about me and not them. Right? That takes bravery. And I want everyone, whoever hears or listens to this, to really take this to heart, because your own control over yourself is the only thing you have to navigate with. If you go through life with your finger pointed out this way, that this person's doing that wrong, and this person, you know, you're lost. It's you. Everything that you're seeing out there is a reflection of what's in here. Now, that doesn't mean it's not, I'm not talking about the mirror teaching, right? I'm not talking about if you see something in somebody else, that's a reflection that that's in you. That's a very old, antiquated, and inaccurate spiritual teaching. The mirror is the other way. When you look out at the world and you see things that are wrong, that is you misguiding your attention and assigning blame externally to your experience when you're the one in control of your experience. Now, you're not in control of what happens to you. And so if you're, you know, if you're in a trauma situation, if you're someone who's regularly abused by someone, I'm in no way, shape, or form saying you're causing it or that you were the point of it or the purpose of it. In what's happening when, okay, now Mr. Ziggy has decided he wants to get down. So Mr. Ziggy will go bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Ziggy.
So, you know, there's the teaching, you create your reality, right? And you create your reality because technically, from a physics point of view, there isn't anything out here, right? We're all made of the same stuff. And this individuated appearances that we have of each other and all the stuff around us is really a hologram from a scientific point of view. So, but from a practicality point of view, we're here, everything's in 3D, and we're having these experiences. And we're not in control of the script of the play. We're not. But we are in control of the lines we say. We are in control of our actions that we choose to make. We are not in control of other people and what they do to us. But we are in control of how we respond to that.
I wanted to bring up a point because we've talked about the need to like speak up with other people. And how does that relate to what you're talking about? Is Ziggy squeaking? Is Ziggy the squeaker?
You're the squeaker. It's your chair.
No.
No? Then I don't know where the squeaker is because I hear it, but
I don't hear it now in my chair.
No, I don't hear it now either. Hi, Jordan. I knew it was you. I just,
yeah,
you know,
I figured
from a privacy standpoint, if you didn't have your name displayed, I didn't want to necessarily display it. But I think if I look at this post later on Facebook, I will see her name.
Yeah, it's so weird how that is.
It shows Manette's for some reason, but it's not showing Jordan. I don't know. But anyway,
yeah,
thank
weird.
You for being here, Jordan.
Yes.
Work is going great for you.
So my question that I wanted to ask is, how does like point the finger inward and everything has to do with me, which I totally agree with, how does that relate to, but we have to sometimes tell people when they're like, ask them, like I was saying, if somebody says something, ask them what they mean by it or try to elicit from them.
Right.
So how do those two things relate?
Well, they relate because when we speak, we're a reflection of ourselves. And so if someone says, you know, oh, I think, you know, drag queens shouldn't be allowed, that's a reflection of their belief. And so when you engage them then and say, tell me more about what makes you think that or feel that, you're just drawing them out to share more of how they see the world. Does that help?
Yeah. It's not for me so much as to make sure it makes sense to other people.
Right.
Because
right.
those two things seem like you could see them as being in conflict with each other. If all my work is interior, then why do I have to talk to people about unpleasant things? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it isn't that all the work is interior. It's that your interior is coloring your experience of the world.
Yes.
Right? You're the movie projector in that sense, right? It's what you're seeing out there, you're seeing it through your light, through your filter, through your life experience. So here's a perfect example of two people having completely different experiences. There's a new doctor in town. And everybody that I've talked to loves this new doctor. Everybody. Until yesterday, I met somebody that didn't like him. I mean, and she even said, don't go to that new one. And I was like,
what? But everybody loves him.
What do you mean? And she said, well, my husband and I went. And he said something. Her husband took it completely differently than she did. She got offended. She thought it was a horrible thing to say. She thought she was being treated badly. No, she thought her husband was being treated badly. And she'll never go back. Her husband, on the other hand, kind of shrugged his shoulders like, it didn't strike him that way at all. So it's a perfect example of how our reaction to things is about us.
Yeah, we create our reality by how we react to the reality that appears to us.
Exactly.
Is a lot of the answer to that.
Exactly.
Nothing has any intrinsic meaning except the meaning
we give it.
Give it.
Exactly. Exactly. Now let's talk about abuse for a minute. Because people that are in abusive situations that feel themselves to be victims are not going to resonate with anything we're saying right now.
Yeah.
And what I can say to trauma victims, to people who are in abusive relationships, is that this is all true. Everything that we've said is true. It may not be your experience right now. Depends on how long the abuse has been going on. If it's been going on a long time, it's really not going to resonate at all, and you're not going to understand it. Because by allowing someone to abuse us, we tell ourselves subconsciously in some way that we're deserving of it. We buy into the abuse. And it becomes very difficult, even though you know that it's not right and that it's not true, whatever they may be saying. You know, I remember when my aunt used to beat me when I would come home at night, and she would just wail on me and beat me and say all this stuff that wasn't true. And I would try and deny it and try and deny it. She wasn't right in any of her behavior, right? Nothing that she was saying was true. And it really wasn't right for her to be beating on me. It also wasn't right for me to let her. And so at one point, I kind of came to my senses, and it was like, I can't let you do this to me anymore. You know, if you want to believe you're right, then fine, you're right. You're right. Go ahead. Think all those things. And what happened was that she no longer, it was my resistance to her reality that inflamed her, right? She would come at me and she would hit me and she would say, blah, 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 blah. And whatever it was something that I would turn around and say, that's not true. I don't feel that. I didn't do that. Whatever it was. And that would just get her riled up even more. And then that would give her more power and to hit me again. And one time I went in and she started in, she got her hand up and she was ready to hit me. And I just said, "You're right." And that arm, I mean, she just, her face changed and her arm dropped because she can't hit me if I'm telling her she's right. The whole engine, the whole fuel and steam behind it was, I was in denial. I was resisting her. And if I turn around and said she was right, she couldn't hit me. And it took her a minute, but she thought of something else and she got her arm up there again and she started to do it again. And I said, "You're right. I agree. You're right." And again, the arm dropped. And she did it a third time. Same thing. Arm dropped. She turned on her heel and walked away. And she never attempted to beat me again. Now, that's a simplistic suggestion for some people who are living in trauma situations. But it's the energy. It's something about the dynamic between the two of you that is causing that trauma. And if you can find a way to shift the perspective of it, you may be able to break what I call the chain of pain. It's not my term, but because that's what that is, right? She was in pain over her own issues. And her being able to beat me made her feel better. It released that trauma that she had in her. Now, you know, if I'd raised kids, my own kids, or, you know, had kids of my own, perhaps I would have had to have dealt with that in me, right? That tendency, because it's a carry on. You end up treating people the way you got treated. And so our cells begin to think that, oh, this is how life works, right? She beat me, I'll beat her. And so breaking that chain of pain, it becomes our individual responsibility. Nobody's going to break it for us. You could send her, I could have sent her to therapy for months. It wouldn't have changed a thing. I see a comment here. This story really changed me and helped me in my own personal life so much. Thank you for sharing that, Jordan. It's a game changer. It's a real game changer. And especially for people who are caught in these cyclical relationships, it's what you have to find, right? You have to find a way to get out, to break the chain of pain, break that cycle and that energetic like whirlpool that gets created.
One of the things that I'm seeing today, I've heard you tell that story before, and what I'm seeing today is just, it's like the power aspect of it, right? The beating you is like dominating you to make you share her view of the world, sort of. And when you didn't, then she didn't know what to do. And I guess, I don't know, there might have been more, but like the idea that it's like a power struggle. And someone wants you to agree with them, and we don't want to agree with something when we know it's wrong.
Right.
And also, like, you know, in your case, that was the way to break the dynamic.
Right.
So it's something, I don't know, it's just a different way of seeing it than I have seen it before, that aspect of the physical dominance. And you know, I'm connecting it to my need to be right. I used to have a very strong need to be right. And so I did argue a lot, you know, and sometimes I just argued for the sake of it, like play devil's advocate or whatever. But like, if I really am right, then it would be like, how can people not see that this is an actual fact that I know, and they're still questioning me, you know? And the need to be right is absolutely diametrically opposed to the desire to have peace.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's something that it's taken me a long time to learn, that sometimes it's okay to just know that I'm right without having to have other people agree with me that I'm right.
Right.
And I think this relates to something else you were talking about. Maybe I can get there. You were saying how it takes bravery just to, like, when stuff happens, look at yourself and untangle it, which is absolutely true. And it also takes bravery just to show up as yourself in the world.
Right.
You know, to, like, take down the barriers and be open-hearted in the face of all of the misery and unkindness, you know, just showing up as our beautiful open-hearted souls in this 3D reality. And right now with, I mean, things are crazy. You know, Linda, my week has just been like, wow. And you described it as like we're trying to pull a cart that's got three square legs, wheels, not legs. Yeah. And that's exactly how it's felt. And just keep showing up and being ourselves in the midst of it. That's the bravest thing we can do. Right. And still being there in a loving way for other people.
Right.
You know, as I know you do every day, and I try to do that too. And just bringing as much as we can, a little ray of sunshine, a little bit of joy to the world.
Right.
You know, that it takes a lot of strength and a lot of bravery.
Yes.
And I think we need to give ourselves credit. You and me and everyone else out there listening to this with us.
Yep.
You know, Nanette and Jordan and anyone else listening in the future, like every day that we like get out of bed and put on our clothes and our best game face and go out into the world and smile at strangers and tell people you like their shoes and pet the dog and, you know, say hi to the roses. It's like,
right,
we are amazing. We really are.
Yeah, we are. I think it's funny that you were talking about the idea of being right. When I was younger, you know, anywhere from 6 or 7 all the way up into adulthood, people would say, Linda might not always be wrong. I mean, Linda might not always be right, but she's never wrong.
Right.
because it was, again, I think when those of us that are born with memories or connection, and we come into this world and we're trying to navigate and we're trying to explain to others what we're here to do and why we're here, like your brother Mark, you know, we knew we were right. Right. I knew when I was a tiny child that some of the stuff I was talking about, I was right and everyone else was wrong. But without the backup, you just, you know, what can you do? You have to let it go. You can't get hung up on that. And in many ways, this is a great way to wrap this conversation up, because these kids are right when they express that they, a little boy wants to wear dresses, the little girl wants to wear cowboy pants, whatever. They are right. And no one, including their parents, should be trying to take that away from them. They're expressing themselves. I remember when my stepson, my first stepson, back in the 80s, when he was old enough to say how he wanted his hair cut, I was ecstatic. I was over the moon, because self-expression in children is so important. And so many of them, I think, just allow themselves to be molded because they don't understand. They don't know what's going on. And there's these people telling them, okay. But then when they start to feel uncomfortable, now they don't have anybody to talk to because they're uncomfortable, but there's no one who will listen.
Yeah. And nobody's taught about boundaries and things like that.
So I know a young man who, when he was a baby, his mother dressed him in girl's clothes because she had wanted a girl. She got a boy, but she wanted a girl. So she used to dress him in girl's clothes.
Uh-huh.
She liked them better. And then when this kid hit puberty, he thought he wanted a sex change operation. And come to find out that all of that mental anguish that kid went through was because his mother had dressed him as a girl when he was little. And he thought that if he had a sex change operation, then she would love him. He could feel that she didn't love him as he was.
Right.
And he thought if he got a sex change operation, maybe his mother would love him. And thank God that the universe intervened before all of that. He did start treatments, but I don't think that any surgery ever happened. And he is now a happy, healthy young man. That's how he was born. That's how he identifies. And in his case, the only attraction was to get the love of his mother that he never could get. And that's a heartbreaking story.
Very sad.
And that happens way more than any of us want to consider. And so how we can protect them is to make the space clear for them and safe for them. And it's on each of us in our own lives to find ways that we can do that.
And when people want to talk about sin, to me, that is sin. Unloving, not loving. Right. That is the only thing that I understand as sin in
right.
my view of the world.
Can you hear Ziggy in the background?
Ziggy, yeah, I was going to say, I think Ziggy agrees with me.
Yeah.
Ziggy knows.
Well, and I think that's a great way to sum it up. That truly sinning is being unloving. If you're loving, then everything else is going to come into place the way it should. It will balance out. Well, I see we're close to the top of the hour. You can always call or text the number on the screen, 1-907-351-3003. And we didn't have anybody call in today, but I always have that phone right here. And you can use that even outside of the show anytime. Leave a message if you don't get me or send me a text. You can also send your emails, questions to questions@walkingthroughyourwalls.com. And if you want to reach out to Mary directly, it's marylaughsloud@gmail.com. So thank you for everybody that's been here. Nanette, I hope you get your credit card charge straightened out. And Jordan, thank you so much for being here as well.
Yes.
And yes, the number to call and ask questions during the show is live. Yes. 1-907-351-3003. And we'll call it a wrap for today. Namaste and much love.